my life. So I turned to educate myself in history, and I became fascinated by the great moments in America that made us who we are today. And one of the biggest and most profound is our identity as a nation today is Pearl Harbor.
And it is so significant, and that's a great way to put it, too. It is definitely part of our identity. And one of the things that is so interesting about this whole issue surrounding Pearl Harbor is that we have so many people who know so much about it, and yet when you start finding out many, many details of what took place around that, we find out that we really don't know much after all. If you could share with us some of the realities on the ground of what was happening, giving us just an idea of what was taking place with regards to the political climate in Japan, the cultural climate in Japan, and what the attitude was of some of the leaders as it pertains to the status that they wanted to have on the world scene.
Well, all of this, to understand Pearl Harbor, we have to back up 10 years to the Great Depression. And while everyone here has seen pictures of the horrible conditions of the Great Depression in the United States, it was nothing compared to what was going on in Japan. The Japan economy was completely crushed. One of the only jobs for young women to be prostitute, one of the only jobs for young men was to enter the armed services. And many of them, after years of living in these horrible conditions, decided that there needed to be a revolution in society. And they decided that they could make that revolution by sending out forces to take over parts of Asia and make Japan into a more militaristic country. And they did it. It's actually, you know, both American leaders and American historians have frequently depicted the Japanese as being just like the Nazis, as being this unified force behind a dictator and a philosophy. But really, they were very much at odds. The army was fighting with the navy, and both of them were fighting with the civilian government, and a very small group of sort of fanatic fascists in the army was able to take over and put its thumb on the government by assassinating civilian leaders and threatening the government with mob violence. And they, starting in 1931, they regularly assassinated prime ministers and foreign ministers, the heads of the government. And they were able to do this so thoroughly that in a couple of years they had taken over the government, and they created such a state of chaos that the government changed hands 15 times in the 14 years of that period.
That is outrageous. How were the Japanese citizens responding to all of that inconsistency, that madness?
Well, Japan had been, until very recently, had been ruled by a shogunate, meaning a military leader. It was then taken over politically by the Emperor Meiji in the mid-1800s. So it had only been actually had a civilian government run under the emperor for about 100 years. And so now the military was sort of reasserting itself. So the Japanese, you know, really they wanted an answer to starving to death, and they weren't really paying that much attention to who was running what then.
And one of the things, one of the things that you write in your book, Pearl Harbor, From Infamy to Greatness, is that although those of us who are outside in the United States hearing this title, Emperor, here a very, very lofty sounding title, one of the things you point out is that the emperor was only a symbolic figure, that he wasn't really running things.
Yes, during the war, Emperor Hirohito was frequently portrayed as being like the George Washington or Abraham Lincoln of Japan, that he was really in control. But in fact, he only gave his consent to what the rest of the government did, because he primarily had a symbolic and religious role in the government, in the nation. And in fact, when in 1945 Japan surrendered, when the emperor met General MacArthur, he was asked why didn't he do more to stop the rush to war, and he said if he had done any more, there would have been a coup d'etat, and he would have been either assassinated or incarcerated in an asylum.
And so for the most part, you're sharing with us now that Japan, for a long, long time, was run by their military.
Yeah, so for almost 200 years, it had been run by the military, and then there was an 800-year period or so when it was run by the civilians under the emperor, and now it was sort of turning back to being run by the military once again.
So You mentioned to us that they were really, really hit hard by the Depression. What brought about the Depression that hit Japan?
Well, Japan had to import all of its natural resources, and one of the ways that we waged war against it before actual war broke out was to limit how much petroleum it could get. And Roosevelt had wanted to own a sort of light form of reducing its petroleum. He only wanted to reduce its aviation-grade gasoline, which is very high octane for planes. But behind his back, people in the State and Treasury Departments negotiated to keep all of American petroleum from going to Japan. So essentially drove the nation into a corner, this technique of using embargoes as warfare. And the country's primarily exports were luxury goods like silk. And in the Depression, no one could buy any silk. So it found its economy completely collapsing, and unemployment grew to unimaginable heights, especially among young people. There was only like 60% unemployment one year among young people.
That is outrageous, and that is definitely a recipe for disaster, even internally. And you mentioned that there were some problems with regards to trade on the international level. America actually wanted to be able to export some of our products to Japan, but had not been allowed to. And apparently they received an ultimatum from one of our leaders, one of our former presidents, in regards to allowing some of our imports in.
Oh, yes. That's the story of the very first contact between the United States and Japan, when it was just converting from rule by the shogunate to rule by the emperor, when Commodore Matthew Perry showed up with gunboats and demanded that Japan open its borders and allow traders, because America had a booming whaling and shipping industry then. It was a big import-export nation, much like Britain. And so they used gunboats to insist that Japan open the port of Tokyo to American traders, and she was forced to do it. And today, the USS Missouri, which is the battleship on which the Japanese surrender was signed by MacArthur and representatives of the Japanese government, is berthed next to Pearl Harbor, and on a wall of that ship is the flag flown by Matthew Perry.
And understandably, the Japanese had some pretty sour feelings about this, about having been forced at gunpoint, literally, to open their country to our exports. And as time went on, of course, some of the skirmishes took place. And you write about how there were some skirmishes that took place in Japan, and not only with America, but there were some problems with the British. The Japanese got involved in a Navy battle with them and with Russia, and were meeting with some pretty impressive successes with their naval battles.
Absolutely. One of the most amazing stories is that the Japanese had a very similar surprise attack on the Russian ships in the waters next to them by the Korean Peninsula. And they had a great success in defeating the Russians there. And that's what they were looking forward to doing again with America. But part of the reason I include so much of this background about the fighting going on in various ways between America and Europe and Japan is to show how difficult the relationship was. Because, you know, now Japan and the United States have been friends for 70 years, and it's hard to imagine a time when they were at loggerheads. So I wanted to really paint the scene thoroughly and show how much fighting and, frankly, how much racism the leaders of the United States had towards the Japanese, which repeats over and over and over again and makes people in Washington not be able to believe that the Japanese could ever actually attack American forces.
That's such an excellent point, and I really like the way you put that history in front of us, because formerly my thinking was, okay, they didn't have a particularly close relationship, the Americans and the Japanese, but it wasn't at all antagonistic either. And the Japanese, for whatever reason, decided that they were going to really get arrogant, and they were going to just try to prove themselves on the world scene by really hitting hard one of the most powerful nations in the world, and so let's attack Pearl Harbor. But it wasn't that cut and dry. It wasn't that simple. There was a history before that history that helped Japan develop the mindset that it had that led eventually to that attack on Pearl Harbor.
They felt that they were disrespected repeatedly. By, in fact, they called the United States and Britain the Anglo-Saxons, and they thought of us as one group of people, and they felt repeatedly disrespected by the United States and Britain. And that's really a lot of resentment got built up. So that what happens in 1941 is that Japan is going to take over the whole of Southeast Asia, from Kamchatka, the border of Russia in the north, to the border with India to the south. It's going to drive out the British and the French. It's going to take over what were once German territories. And the only power that stands in its way of doing that is the Pacific Fleet of the United States anchored in Hawaii. So they decided that it would be a good idea. Well, actually, only a couple of people decided it would be a good idea. And the main admiral who decided kept threatening to quit if he wasn't allowed to do it. But he decided that by taking out the fleet in Hawaii, that the United States citizens would completely give up and let Japan have its way in Asia, which is sort of a crazy idea, because if there's one thing Americans like, it's justice.
You got that right. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest, yours and mine, Dr. Craig Nelson, an outstanding historian, doing an outstanding job of painting the picture that existed before the planes were sent to Pearl Harbor. So do we get an idea of what was going on with regards to attitudes and thinking that led up to the Pearl Harbor disaster? Craig Nelson and I'll be right back more as he speaks with us from his book, Pearl Harbor, From Infamy to Greatness.
Now, by examining events leading up to the attack and analyzing previously classified military records, a Japanese intelligence expert discovers why the raid was such a total disaster.